The first tee honestly isn't nerve-wracking at all. It's the 36th tee or the 72nd tee, or you know what I mean?
All right, folks, thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Unfiltered podcast. I'm your host, as always, Adam Fonseca, editor-in-chief over at golfunfiltered.com. You can follow me on Twitter at golfunfiltered. You can send me an email at the new email address, golfunfiltered@gmail.com. Today, I'm happy to welcome Mr. Will Wilcox from the PGA Tour onto the show. Will, how are you today?
Good, yeah. I'm having a good day. I got into the Valero tournament on Tuesday, and I'm actually in the golf tournament. I'm 156th man out of 156, so it's a good day.
Nice. And we were talking a little bit before we got going here, but as you mentioned, you were the last man in. So you're down in San Antonio. We want to make sure that we get you out in time to go to a couple things tonight. You got a fajita cookout to go to.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting a ride with Smiley. So nice. I don't want to be late to that. But, I mean, it's not anything too pressing, though. I'm fine. I'm a talker.
Nice. Well, we're glad to have you on, and thanks so much for coming on. You know, Willie, we were talking a little bit beforehand. You know, obviously, you've got a huge following on social media. You know, a lot of guys like to talk to you, and I think a lot of that is because you're so responsive on social. You know, with your opinion on social media in general, I mean, do you feel that this is a good thing for the game, that golfers are interacting more with fans? Because you seem to do it quite often.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely directed, or it's affected me in a very positive way. I mean, at first, when I was, you know, younger and Twitter was in its early years, I mean, I thought it was, you know, a little bit lame, but and I remember my dad, when I first turned pro, saying how important all this kind of self-marketing stuff was, and it's been a really great thing for me. I'm really glad that I've, you know, started embracing it. And so I think it's great. And I mean, it doesn't take much time. And I've, like, I guess I could say groomed my, you know, fans / followers into not really abusing me when I play bad. and that's huge. I mean, when you hear nothing but negative stuff coming at you, I mean, you can be turned away from social media pretty quickly. But now it's just so cool how when I play poorly, nobody's coming at me. Fairly emotional person, so it's never nice to hear anything like that. And I think it's wonderful, and I think guys should embrace it more. I mean, that's more off course opportunity, and you know, people want to hear from you anyway. So
good deal. And like I said, I think a lot of that goes hand in hand with just being engaging with your fans, like you are very much so. And you and I chat every so often on Twitter, and I think what I really like about your social media presence is you really just take it to the level of, hey, look, I'm a regular guy. This is the type of stuff that I do. Here's a video or two of my swing, which we'll get to your golf swing in here in just a little bit. But when there are those instances when players perhaps, you know, dislike social media, and certainly I'm not asking you to name any names or anything like that, but certainly there's some occasions when some other guys on tour don't embrace it as much. Why do you think that is? Is it because solely of all the haters and the trolls that are on social, or is it something different?
I mean, I think it's a lot of the just old school guys. You know, a lot of guys are just set in their ways. I mean, you know, you do it one way. I'm definitely I would say part of the younger generation. So it's, although I feel like an old guy sometimes out here with all these young dudes, but people are just stuck in their ways. I mean, you know, and they're like, I don't care what those people think type stuff. So it's just, whereas I kind of do. So it's just, people just don't pay attention to it. I mean, you know, a lot of people, the big time guys, I mean, they have someone running it for them. You know, and then there's just the financial gains that you can get on tour. I mean, a lot of guys, like, I was trying to get Bubba Watson to respond to me last week, and just for the heck of it. And so it's a situation where these guys just, I mean, my buddy Marino, I'm not saying anything bad about him, but he just has no interest in it. I mean, you know, he's 35, 6, 7 years old, and I mean, he just has no interest in it. He doesn't see any positives in it, but I do. I mean, it's just personal preference, but it's been a great thing for me.
And you've certainly embraced it, as we've said a couple times. And, you know, Will, one of the things that you do showcase a lot on social, not only on Twitter, which listeners, you can follow Will if you don't already, at Will Wilcox Golf, but also on Instagram, you're very active on that. And you have a lot of videos of your golf swing. And it's just a swing that I would say I would classify it as unique. Would you classify your own golf swing as maybe a little bit unique from some of the other more mechanical ones out there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's worked great and it's worked poorly, and it's I sometimes wish that I was one of those guys that could have their swing coach come out and bam, they're playing well. But then other times it's, you know, being a field player is it's got its ups and downs. I mean, I had that great year in 15 where I was in the top couple of ball striking and, you know, led a lot of categories and stuff. And I just grew up on a little course in Alabama, and my mom was a pro, and she just, you know, handed me a club, and, you know, we just kind of went nuts. So, I mean, I just played. I'd always played by myself, and she wasn't overbearing or anything. So my swing just kind of became what it was, and it just kind of happened. But, yeah, I mean, I was never somebody that could if I go to a swing coach or get too many tips, then I really struggle with it. So I've had guys tell me that I needed to change it, and, you know, but then, you know, it's really supported me. The golf swing that I have is, you know, I got a house and stuff. So right. It's just a situation where, you know, I'm not going to make any drastic changes at this point. I mean, when I was in my early 20s, people definitely wanted to break it down, but you know, luckily I didn't really do much. I mean, I just saw a direct correlation of playing poorly after someone made some sort of genius tip.
Yeah, I felt the same about my game, and believe me, I'm nowhere near your caliber, and it's just something that gets annoying when people are trying to throw in anecdotes or tips when you're really not asking for it.
Yeah, and you know, it's just it's definitely my own, and but it is cool how a lot of the players and fans and stuff, they seem to kind of gravitate to my swing. I mean, fairly emotional player and stuff, but yeah, like I can hit the ball really, really low, and a lot of the older guys really think that's a good kind of lost art that not a lot of guys do. And that DeChambeau, he can hit a little bullet though. He's probably the youngest guy that I know that hits the stinger. And but yeah, I love the workability of my swing, and I just hope it, you know, can get rolling again soon, like so I can, you know, start reeling some good finishes in.
And you've had some great finishes in your career. You know, obviously in 2015, you shot 67 in the final round at the Barbasol. And in 2015, as many listeners, and Willie, you got to understand, the listeners to this show, they're a bunch of gearheads. They're golf nerds just like you and me. And they'll know, yeah, and they'll remember that you finished second in the all-around ranking on the PGA Tour between Jason Day and Jordan Spieth. So obviously, not to mention in 2013, you shot 59 with that golf swing. So obviously, it's doing a little bit something for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, but there's definitely been more ups and downs. I'm pretty realistic about things, and, you know, it's just kind of like whatever. You know, if I can pay my bills and live comfortably, and, you know, go where I want to go, you know, through my golf swing, then I'm gonna just keep doing it, and I'm just gonna ride it until it bucks me, and, you know, whatever. If that's 35, 30. 8 or 48 or whatever. I don't really care. I mean, I just feel lucky to have been able to do it as long as I have at this point. I mean, I was able to live out my 20s playing pro golf. So I think that's something a lot of people wish they could do.
Absolutely. And you had mentioned earlier that you are down in San Antonio for this week's Valero Texas Open, and hopefully we're going to see a lot of good things from that golf swing. But, you know, Will, one of the things I've always mentioned, or wondered, I should say, about these weeks, you know, you got in a little bit later to the tournament. It's obviously, we're recording this on a Tuesday. Tournament starts on Thursday. What has your week been up to this point? Is it, you know, pro-ams? Is it media events? What have you been doing for the last couple of days?
I mean, you know, Easter was Sunday, and I flew out, you know, I played golf. I practiced in Bama. I mean, I live in Jupiter, but my girlfriend's in Birmingham. And so I was seeing her and her family and my family and stuff for Easter. And then I flew out here late in the day yesterday. So, Monday is always a travel day. Sometimes Tuesday, depending on how far I have to go. Got to the hotel somewhat late. Got out to the course as early as I could, and, you know, on the range early in the day, you know, we were on range for 25, 30 minutes before I played. Everybody's like, are you going to get in? Are you going to get in? And I'm like, I have no idea. And, you know, it's just funny how kind of the mood changes around you, you know, cause I got the call, you know, as I was hitting three woods, and, I just kept my phone in my pocket, and I was like, I felt it buzzing, and I was like, please be the PGA Tour, please be the PGA Tour. and it ended up being them. So, you know, when you get that call, when you're on the cusp of getting in or not, I mean, it's very rare that the first alternate doesn't get in, especially in a tournament that's, you know, not a Hilton Head or, you know, Bay Hill or something. I felt pretty good about it, but still, as the minutes tick away, you know, the stress kind of goes up.
Right.
Because I was gonna have to go over to the Webb event in Indiana, which wouldn't have been the end of the world. I wouldn't have cared. I mean, I'll go play the Webb. I actually enjoy playing the Webb, especially the events that are in, you know, the domestic tournaments. They run really well. Not that they're not run well in South America, but it's just a lot more comfortable, you know. I mean, it's a bit of a cluster, not knowing if you're gonna get in, but I am now, so now I can just kind of relax and enjoy the experience.
I love how you say you're going to relax now. And, you know, obviously if I were to step up to the first tee at a PGA Tour event, I'd be shitting myself, but you know, you're going to go out and enjoy the experience, which is great. And
I think I've played 60, 65 or so at this point. I mean, the first tee honestly isn't nerve wracking at all. It's the 36th tee or the 72nd tee, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
The first one, I mean, you can make a 12 on the first hole. Or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
like, hole one has no bearing on the finish of the golf tournament. Really, your front nine has no bearing on the tournament. I mean, you don't want to shoot 50, obviously, but you definitely don't want to lay an egg. But, you know, you can just kind of – that's something that the veterans have always told me, is you just don't get too worked up about what happens on the opening nine. You got plenty of time.
So in the course that you're going to play at, of course, is the TPC San Antonio. Have you had a chance to get a good look at the course for this year? You said you were out there practicing already, but what can the fans expect?
Today.
You played 18 today. What are some of the holes that you feel are going to be the biggest turning points, at least in your game, but maybe even the tournament?
We'll see. A couple goofy par five. Eight's kind of a hard par five. I mean, it's just a solid course, and it's, you know, you don't, if you hit it in the woods, it's rocks and really low-hanging trees, and you're kind of in jail. It's where Kevin Na made the 16.
Right.
But Kevin Na, actually, coincidentally, is the guy who withdrew today that let me in.
Interesting.
I mean, it's 16, you got like a birdie par four on, I mean, 18 is a great par five, but 16 is the hole with the bunker in the middle of the green.
Right.
So that's kind of an iconic feature. I always feel like 16 and 18 are very pivotal. You know, as long as you just keep it out of the trees or keep it out of the kind of the desertish stuff, you know, you can get this course. I mean, it was a warm day and the wind was hardly blowing today. So, I mean, you know, today was kind of like fake golf, but it was still, you know, you got to get it around and see the course. But, I mean, it's fairly long. Those finishing holes are the ones where it goes down.
So let's say it's Thursday afternoon. You've just finished your first round. How do you unwind after that first couple of rounds in a tournament?
I just drink a few beers.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like to have a couple beers. I mean, I'm not. I told my girlfriend we're gonna actually get married in the next year. She'll be a fiance soon. I told her she would never see me blackout drunk, and that's definitely the case with me. I tried that stuff when I was younger, and now I know my limits, and I'll have 2, 3, maybe 4 beers over a couple hours, sit by the pool, you know, go out to eat with some buddies. And just chill. I don't really grind. I do that enough of that when I'm home. And, you know, if there's something tempo wise, I may hit range balls for half an hour after I play, but, I take a fairly leisurely approach to it, and it's worked fine to this point, so I'm going to keep doing it. And but yeah, I like to drink beers after the round. I mean, not too many, but you know what I mean. If you
I
have
got
six or seven, I mean, over a 3 hour period, you're an idiot. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, man. So yeah, are we going to see you at any point in SBK, I don't know, 2018? You said you're riding with Smiley today. Is he going to invite you out there, or are those guys getting a
Yeah.
world of themselves?
Oh, I'm good on that. They can have a big time. And if you're gonna have some friends, I think Smiley picked some good ones. Yeah, I mean, they're a good bit younger than me.
Yeah.
I'm not really in their generation, but or I mean, maybe their generation, but not their like their squad.
Right, right.
They all played at the big D1 schools. They all got PGA Tour wins, and you know, I say God bless them, but I'll stick to my vacation solo with whoever.
That sounds like a good plan. So, you know, Willie,
Yeah.
don't want to keep you for too long. Obviously, I know you're a busy guy, but I did want to have the opportunity here to talk to a PGA Tour player about something that's been in the news as of late, and this is the whole ball marking controversy that, of course, we saw unfortunately unfold with Lexi Thompson over in the LPGA at the ANA Inspiration a couple weeks ago. Obviously, you heard about that situation. What was your first, take or impression when you heard what happened, or did you actually see it on TV?
I didn't see it, but I definitely heard about it. And I mean, you definitely don't want the person that's carrying the torch for American female golf weeping as she goes down the fairway. That was definitely a black eye on the LPGA tour. But you know, in this cooling incident, you know, they started barking about Sergio's thing on 13 when he hit left and stuff on Sunday at the Masters. I mean, it's a bummer that, you know, you got people that are sitting behind their laptop watching that are you know,
Right.
can affect the outcome of a golf tournament like that. She absolutely deserved to win. And but I think she is she handled it with such class that, you know, I think she'll get more money, sponsorship money, and people are going to love her even more as a result. But yeah, it's a situation where there's a gray area, there's a few gray areas when on golf rules. She was only a foot from the hole. I highly doubt she was trying to gain an advantage of any way, of any kind. So, you know, in that particular case, you know, that was just a bummer that someone sitting at home could, you know, take a major championship out of her hands. I mean, that's madness. I can't believe that even exists. Because I'm pretty sure the other players are, you know, they're keeping an eye on each other because everybody's trying to get money. You know, they're trying to have a career. But I had something like that happen a few years ago, and I mean, it ruined my mental state for months. It was in my rookie year in 2011 on the web, and I had this random dude say that he thought I moved my coin. It spread like wildfire. Everybody thought I was trying to pull something when I absolutely wasn't. And I saw him last year in Japan and was like, man, I must be pretty good at cheating, huh? Because I haven't been caught since. So, and I played about 1,000 times. It's that gray area of I don't think they ever said cheat, but
Right.
you know, it's just when it comes to entry points into hazards and you know drop angles and all that stuff, it's just kind of like that gray area needs to be noted because you know crap like that should happen more often, honestly. I'm surprised it doesn't.
You know, and one of the things that obviously Phil Mickelson came out and he didn't necessarily throw anybody under the bus at the Masters, but he did say that he knows of some guys on tour that are a little bit more lax with marking their ball. You know, I don't see it as being a huge issue. I mean, I'm just an amateur player, and obviously, if my ball comes to rest on a little dimple on the green, I know it's not to the letter of the law, but chances are I'm going to move it over a little bit so that it's not resting in a
Yeah.
dimple. You know, do you feel that that kind of stuff happens on tour? And if so, is it really that big of a deal taking the rules of golf out of it? I mean, you're not giving yourself that much of an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just I'll move my mark and then like kind of fix it and you know, whatever, make it as smooth as physically possible. But yeah, I mean, it's a weird deal that you know, that came up and has become such a hot button issue because I've always thought, man, this could potentially be sketchy. But the one that bothers me the most is the entry point of hazards. That's the one that really gets a lot of attention out here. I definitely am not. I mean, I barely even know what I'm doing. I'm not paying attention to what other people are doing.
Right.
So, I mean, I just would never know something like that. Phil must be pretty focused on what his, I highly doubt he cares at all what his playing partners are doing. You know, so there's so many numbers out here. It's just like, you're not slipping one by anybody, at least in my opinion. I just hope I don't ever get called out on it, because I'm absolutely not trying to pull anything. And, you know, as long as it doesn't affect me directly or the outcome of any tournaments, I don't really care.
Fair enough. So what time's your tee time tomorrow, and what time should we tune in to cheer you on?
Well, Thursday.
Thursday.
I don't know when you post this podcast or what, but if it's tomorrow, then my bad.
No worries.
But yeah, so I got off at 1:40 with Kevin Streelman and Ricky Barnes, so they're a couple nice dudes. I would say 90% of the guys out here are pretty nice guys. But yeah, 1:40 off 10.
Nice.
So that'll be sweet. I can't wait. I'm just actually starting to play pretty good, and I got a putter that's working.
Nice. That's always something that's helpful. And Kevin Streelman, he's actually from a hometown near me in Wheaton, Illinois. So that's awesome. Good guy out there. So
yeah, his caddy is from Alabama, and I know him fairly well. So
awesome. Well, Will, I really do appreciate you hopping on and taking a few minutes to chat. Once again, folks, you can follow Will Wilcox on Twitter at Will Wilcox Golf. Will, I wish you nothing but the best this week at the Valero Texas Open, and hopefully we can do this again in the future.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.